myself to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, this is the automatically deleted husband. I did finally get earlier because I figured I'm automatically deleted anyway, so I could call you at 3 a.m. and you wouldn't know, right? It was a lot of things happened, and some things I think you would find interesting, but that is if you were actually involved in my life, like you committed, you know, that till death you apart thing that was, again, Book of Common Prayer, not Scripture, but the Scripture does. Oh, it's that Romans 7 thing. Oh, no, we don't want to go there because, after all, Jesus is the Redeemer. Oh, yeah, that's right, but only for his elect. And how do you know if you're the elect? Well, that was part of the discussion of today. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments, John 14:15. So that, okay, I was going to do the other stuff first, but let's do this first. There was a discussion today, and part of the discussion was on John 14, and that verse, you know, been through before, and it stood out again. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. I find it fascinating because one of the things we've discussed to try to refine the understanding of, because you hear a lot of people say, oh, we're Christian now. We live in the New Testament times, not Old Testament times. Old Testament was a bunch of rules. New Testament, we live under grace, not under law. May I suggest? Absolute garbage. Because what people look at is they look at, say, oh, the Old Testament with a bunch of rules, and I've heard described as a wrathful God. No, I'm sorry. You know, Old Testament, God was just really angry, and New Testament, he became a nice guy. No, not at all. The rules that were set down are the rules to define love. You look at the Ten Commandments and you think of, well, okay, are they denying me something? You shall not steal. Oh, well, I should be able to steal, shouldn't I? You know, when we read that the Lord's commands are not burdensome, where is the burden of saying, okay, as an act of love, I have learned that I don't steal? I mean, not stealing is not something that restricts me from the good life. Not stealing is showing me how I can love my neighbor, literally. You know, go one step further. You know, you shall not commit murder. Gee, if I don't commit, I am being so repressed because I can't kill my neighbor. That's foolishness. One of the ways to love somebody is not to kill them. You know, think about that, you know. Whether you're on the giving or the receiving end of that, killing is just simply not a good idea. But then you have the idea of you shall not covet. Ooh, well, you're not seeing anything happen, but it's in your heart. So you say, okay, I cannot think about or have that desire for something you have. Now, that's me loving somebody else, but it's internal. So we're starting to get a little fuzzy, aren't we? And then, of course, you shall not commit adultery. Whoa, now you're stepping on somebody's toes here. So what you have to do is redefine what adultery is. You know, again, when I make the case, marriage begins with sex and ends with death, because marriage is the reflection of the relationship between God and his elect, also known as the bride of Christ. So you have that relationship, and what is seen in that relationship? That is what you would call maybe the epitome of love, because the Lord says, I will never leave you or forsake you. you know, it's repeated several times, and it's command for the husband to do with his, for his wife, which again, I've committed to do for my wife. She left me. I didn't leave her, you know, and I still want her back. But, you know, again, she doesn't live under the law, apparently. Well, the law of the state, not the law of the Lord. No, she doesn't even do that either because, you know, obviously I'm getting voicemails instead of being allowed to communicate with my kids as the law of the state says. So it's, you know, the line, laws for thee and not for me. That's what she's living. But I love her anyway. I love my wife, the woman who has ripped me apart emotionally, who's denied me access to my kids and my wife, and I still love her. Why would I do that? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. What is the church? The ecclesia, the assembly of his elect. What are those people made of? Absolutely disgusting people. And you will never leave them or forsake them. He went to the cross for them in order to give a visual demonstration of what love is. So this is what the husband is called to do for his wife. You've done foul things, disgusting things. You have really hurt me. I love you anyway. And if you claim to love Christ, you know, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. So, you know, the idea, again, Old Testament is the laws, New Testament is grace. Well, what are the laws in the Old Testament we say, well, we are offended at? You know, clearly, the Ten Commandments stuff, no, not a problem. What we look at also is the sacrificial laws. If this happens, the sacrifice is required. If that happens, the sacrifice is required. Why were those things there? They were there to show us the cost of sin and how it needs to be paid. But it was summarized in the idea, without the shedding of blood, there's no forgiveness of sins. But the blood of goats and bulls was insufficient. So we have the blood of Christ, which is the once-for-all sacrifice. And therefore, those commandments, if this happens, this particular animal sacrifice, this particular offering, whatnot, has to be made, it's paid for. So it's not that those laws were bad or burdensome or something of that nature, but they're resolved, they're paid for. In the same way, who was doing the sacrifices? Specifically, the Lord set out the Levites. Well, they don't have a job anymore. And therefore, you have a couple things. One, there's no way to prove that anyone is a Levite. I mean, the records are gone. Therefore, there is no way to tithe to a Levite because the tithe was for the Levite. So if somebody uses the tithe and says, well, it's for the institutional church, it's fraud. It's deception. It's theft. So, there's a consistency in this idea. And Paul says, without the law, I wouldn't know what sin is. And now we know what sin is. You know, I'm not going to steal from a neighbor because that would be a violation of the law. And I can clearly understand that and clearly articulate it because the Lord has written it down so I can understand and, again, articulate it and then live it. You know, and that's why it gets more complex, but that's why I tell you, I refuse Social Security. And I will tell you, if you're a follower of Christ and you're accepting Social Security, you have been deceived. You are a thief. Repent. But you say, I put into it. No, you didn't put into it. It was stolen from you. And if you take it now, you're stealing from somebody else. Because you're not getting your money back. You're getting somebody else's money. It's theft. I've gone that into detail. But so all the rationalization goes on. Oh, the Lord is a spoilsport, but now he's offering grace and we're not under the law. Yes, we are. You know, the idea of, you know, don't commit murder remains. You know, that's why when you get to, well, I mean, the easy one, the one I quote often, the Revelation 21:8, as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, and all for all murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. So, detestable, murderers, sexually immoral. That's the law. That's the law. But, you know, how about the cowardly and faithless? That's the law too. You know, because you should have no other God before me. And the command to what is belief, the distortion of John 3:16, whoever believes, the belief, faith, and trust has the same root. If I say I believe, I could say that the border on these pictures behind me is red, and I could believe it. It's not true, but I could believe that. And I could say that, but it's not true, is it? So, you know, saying you believe and trusting something, that's what you're called to do. And you trust the Lord because you have no other God besides Him. So again, there is a consistency between Old Testament and New Testament. It's not rules and then grace. It's been grace from the beginning. You know, Adam received grace because he wasn't put to death immediately. I mean, he lived, what, almost 1,000 years longer, or 900, whatever it is. And of course, you know, Noah wasn't a perfect fellow. Either was Abraham. You know, Abraham was a liar. David was a murderer and adulterer. And there was that grace offered back then, just as it's offered now. Nothing's changed. This idea of different dispensations, no. It's an unfolding of the story, so we have greater clarity of what the Lord has said. Rules didn't change. They've been the same from the beginning. I found that whole thing, and then of course, if you love me, keep my commandments, because there are so many people who rest in the idea that I'm part of the institution, and that's how I show my love for Christ. Yeah, but I won't love my neighbor. No. I won't love mine goes blank, but I know the verse number. They said to one another, in truth, we were guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of the soul when he begged us, and we did not listen. That's why this distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered him, did I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you did not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood. I've asked for reconciliation with people, and they keep a closed door. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. You want evidence if you love the Lord? You want evidence whether or not you stand before the Lord redeemed? You have somebody begging you to reconcile. Reconciliation. What did Christ enter his creation to do? Reconciliation. The reason that has come up, and the reason I wanted to express that, is because Sunday. No, it was Saturday. I'll double check this. No? Okay. It was Sunday. No, it was Saturday. Boy, this is getting hard, isn't it? On Christmas Day, put it that way. It was Saturday. It was Christmas Day. I I did a, you know, I've done this a couple times, a non-voicemail voicemail where I didn't make the call because it was on the weekend, but I did do the video. And so it was on Christmas, Mr. Cross, I will die trying. Will you die avoiding? I've actually put that in a DVD. It went in the mail to him. Did it go Sunday? I sent him a postcard today just to make sure he understands it's there. I highly recommend it. I did get kind of long. That one went over an hour. But one of the things, it's the same thing in the, you know, kozlowski.org/hebeggedus, you know, again, I just happen to have these here. The reason I put the He Begged Us link here is because it goes to the message I sent to MetaView where I begged them. I did use the Genesis 42 theme, but the important thing that I mentioned in the Christmas voicemail also was the idea, again, of the whistleblower. And like I say repeatedly, if you go to kozlowski.org, you find a whole lot of stuff about whistleblowers, most notably Daniel Hale, who's in prison today as I do this. He's in prison, probably in a SAMS. And I've described how that really hit home because that's what they're called. The isolation. One of the things that happened today, because it happens often, I was in the kitchen and just completed or something of that nature, a smoothie. You know, when I was in that smaller apartment at daybreak, I had the smoothies. So that hasn't changed. But then I can look across the room and I have this room. In, you know, I have a dining room, which doesn't have a dining room table, but, you know, it's big and open because, you know, the kitchen and whatnot, it's all big and open. You know, I have it's a 1,200 square foot house and probably at least over a third of it is these two rooms. It's open. And that really, really means a lot to me. And of course, as I point out, the windows. It helps your mind. Daniel Hale is in a small room. He has a bed, a toilet, sink. That's it. They're typically denied books or anything of that nature. From what I understand, what they do now in the SAMS facilities, if a letter comes or whatnot, it'll be shown to you on a screen. You can't even touch the letter. You can't have books or things of that nature. You're alone. That's cruel. So I have the advantage, and as I pointed out, I go out that door and I go down a 300-foot driveway, you know, go to the mailbox and back. I make a tenth of a mile round trip. So I do that 10 times, you know, but I don't stop there. You know, I take 4-mile hikes, 7-mile hikes, 12-mile hikes, so forth. I haven't done too many 12 lately. It's been 4, 7, and 9 mostly. But anyway, I do that and I get out. It's cruel to keep someone locked into a room like that. And why do you put someone locked in a room like that? Because he said, "Dear taxpayer, we're killing people. We're killing civilians and children with your tax dollars." Don't do that. We're going to persecute you. And that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing to Julian Assange, basically for the same reason. That's what they did for Bradley Manning, basically for the same reason. You know, and the difference is, in the case of what Bradley Manning exposed, a lot of people died. But some were saved by Ethan McCord, the Tooman kids. And the difference there is I know their names. The last name. However, when the institutional church isolates somebody, when people who claim to be followers of Christ isolate somebody, throw a cold heart, what's the difference? What's the difference between what the government is doing by keeping, by torturing, literally torturing Julian Assange and literally torturing Daniel Hale? You know, in the case of Julian Assange, we have the British government do it for us. In the case of Daniel Hale, the U.S. government's doing it directly. In the case of the arguably torture, it's being done by my wife and family and the institutional church. You know, Meadowview, Covenant Presbyterian. Because when we saw the distress in his soul, when he begged us and we did not listen, that's what's happening. It's the same thing. I have the joy that allows me to get out and walk. You know, I continue to do my, you know, now I'm doing the 1,000 jumping jacks a day. I'm walking, you know, miles upon miles every week. And that keeps me healthy. So you have an advantage. You know, Julian Assange just turned 50, and apparently there's, you know, they're driving him nuts to the point that he apparently is attempting to kill himself. Because he's, you know, he's being driven crazy. But what I have is this ability to walk, so I'm going to stay healthy. And I may indeed live to be 90, as I promised my wife I would strive to do. Because again, I'm ridiculously healthy. So that means 25 more years of being tortured. Are you happy? Are you thrilled? Are you just celebrating that we don't have to love this guy and we can give him hell on earth for another 25 years because he's in good health? That's exactly what you're doing. Because there's no love there. There's simply no love there. I wanted to end with that, but the other thing is, I was, you know, it was interesting because I don't know. My web server, the Kazalan.org site, apparently started having some trouble. And I reloaded it last night, and it seems to be fine now. And the thing I wonder, and I continue to improve the tools on this, I don't know if it was a bug or an attack, or I goofed, or, you know, hardware failure, whatnot. Because obviously my site is being hammered constantly by crawlers and things of that nature. I did notice, because, you know, I have one piece of software. So the software, Shofar Nexus, and then built on top of that is Rapid Onsite to run gas pumps. But the underlying core is Shofar Nexus. And so what I do is, what's running Kozlowski.org is basically Shofar Nexus and Rapid Onsite with Rapid Onsite turned off. Because I just have the one. There's documentation and so forth built in, and a crawler apparently found it and started sending a command that was turned off, and because it was turned off, it caused an issue. So I know things like that happen. So that would be an error on my part that I did fix. But then I also, I'm very aware of there are attacks that occur. And whether or not it happened or not, I don't know, because I simply wiped the machine. But more than likely, it was potentially an error on my part, or but anyway, so I'm very conscious of those things. And one of the things that's important is part of the objective behind Shofar Nexus is the ability to put something out there, have it get destroyed, and be able to replicate itself and come back because it's multiple locations and so forth. That technology is sort of there, and I've kind of demonstrated it yesterday, but I did it manually and obviously went doing it automatically because, you know, again, one of the marketplaces is a lot of people get caught on the ransomware idea where somebody comes in, puts a virus in your machine that typically at night will go and encrypt all your files, and they say, okay, you want the key? It'll cost you however much, and we'll give you the key and you get your files back. And if you are a government agency, like the City of Baltimore and a few other places, you know, the ransom key is $2 million or whatever. And often it's paid. And the fascinating thing is deception here, because the typical thing to do is say, oh, it's Russian hackers. Some of them might be. Most of them probably aren't. And I don't think it has anything to do with the Russian government. It is somebody that the ones that happen are typically somebody wants to make some money. There's a whole lot of those people who simply say, I want to make some money by stealing from you. Oh, again, but that's you know, we live under grace, so we can do that, right? You know, but the deception that's going on, it was a Colonial Pipeline got hit. Their accounting system got hit, so they shut down their pipeline. Why? It's a PR stunt. Because now you can say the pipeline is at risk. It wasn't touched. It was their accounting system. It has nothing to do with the pipeline. But they shut down the pipeline in order to embellish the event and to help you live in fear. And it gives an opportunity to say, we need more regulation. But one other thing I heard about, and I wanted to mention, because I continue to see this in so many ways. You're obviously familiar with Omicron, or as is often pointed out, you jumble the letters, you get moronic. Again, I can't think of his name. The actor who shot somebody, killed somebody on a set, compared to Omicron. So the actor won, Omicron zero on total deaths, because there was somebody attributed to their death to Omicron in Texas, and they came out and said, no, actually not. And again, the issue is that fundamental idea, dying of or dying with. You know, it's kind of like, how many people die with a t-shirt on? Aha, it's the t-shirt that's killing them. It's stupid. And that's basically what it is. The objective is fear. And so many people say that viruses will naturally, over time as they mutate, they become weaker. And the advantage of them becoming weaker is that when your body, somebody gets it new, they get the virus and they either have a mild symptoms or no symptoms, but their antibodies build the natural defense, which is far better than the virus. And then it percolates through, and especially when the virus spreads faster, and people get the, you know, asymptomatic, they catch it, their antibody system, you know, because they're typically in good health, they build the antibodies, and it wipes out the virus. It's herd immunity as herd immunity was defined 2 years ago, not the way it's defined now, where most people are vaccinated. You know, you change the language. Kind of like, instead of using assembly, use church, because you have an objective. Anyway. But what brings that up is a couple of things. One is, I just saw the one gentleman I mentioned. Do I have his name up here? Norman Fenton. I mentioned him a little while ago because he's the mathematician who shows the statistics, how he showed how the curve, the showing of all the people dying who were unvaccinated, and how it was an absolute distortion. It was lying with statistics. because it's simply not true. Again, as I point out, there's the vaccinated, the unvaccinated, and the recently vaccinated. And that's, you know, by adjusting the terminology, you can get the people who are dying, which is highest in the recently vaccinated crowd, and effectively call them unvaccinated in order to make your argument. And that's what was done. But he also, the UK has just come up with their, you know, now they've collected up to 2 weeks of whether or not you get test positive after being not vaccinated, having one dose, two doses, or three doses. Three doses more than 14 days ago. And non-vaccinated, you're 1.57 times more likely if you have one dose, 2.26 times more likely if you have two doses, and 4.45 times more likely if you have three doses. And this is post 14 days, so you are truly considered vaccinated. So you're over four times more likely, according to their sample size. Their sample size is only a couple thousand total. So it's not a huge sample size. But, you know, so you say, okay, we need to get the vaccine in people so they don't get the disease, but they're four times more likely to get the disease or to test positive if they are vaccinated. Do you see a logical problem here? Do you have enough mind to think, well, then if you love me, you will keep my commandments? If you can't do that, no, this probably seems to be, say, oh, look, we need the vaccine. That would be consistent. If you avoid this, you won't see that. You know, and the other thing that is so vital is, because I remember so many years ago when it happened with AIDS, and it happened a lot when people were trying to promote ideas of various, you know, back then it was called VD, venereal diseases, you know, sexually transmitted diseases. And the thing was important. Get tested! Testing doesn't cure you. You know, and to be tested for VD or STDs, if you're monogamous, no need to test, right? I've never been tested. I've only had one, you know, one lady. Her name is Dorothy Jane. That lady right there, my wife. That's it. It's only one. And I want her back, but that's another issue. No, that's a fundamental issue. I want her back. Anyway, but so there's a problem. Why do you test? And then, of course, well, we have to know why. Why do people who have shown no symptoms need to be tested to do the so-called case demic? Because the reason we say, oh, look at the huge numbers of cases. Again, as it pointed out, they changed the definition of herd immunity to being when most people are vaccinated, as opposed to most people have built their own natural antibodies. So you change the definition there. And then, of course, you change the definition of a case. Because 2 years ago, a case was somebody who was sick. Now a case is somebody tests positive. Have no symptoms, nothing. But you test positive. And you use a test, and apparently the same test is still being used, the PCR test. And it used to be that you could be able to find out the number of cycles that were used when you would have a test done. Now, apparently, they don't tell you anymore. So, you know, if you do the cycle count above, was it 25 or so, it's considered useless. And if you look at the statistics, about 25, go past that, it just skyrockets. So you get to 30 and, you know, 40, which again is an amplification of a trillion, you're going to find something, and therefore you're going to test positive. And that's why the, especially when you get past 40, the false positive rate is like over 99%. It's ridiculous. It's really ridiculous. So, you know, and then what happens is you have the entire world living in fear. Fear is a killer. Like isolation, fear is a killer. Oh, yeah. And I have to... you know, because... Oh, gee. Trying to be simple, but I'm failing at that terribly. The 1 Peter 3. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves by submitting to their husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you are children if you do good, and do not fear anything that is frightening. You say, ooh, do not fear anything that is frightening. What I've found is that idea... you can find it in Isaiah. And I didn't prepare for this. So it is, you know, Isaiah something. Okay, there it is. So often I think people look at the first part of the verse, Isaiah 8:12. Do not call conspiracy all that these people call conspiracy. And you say, oh yeah, this conspiracy theorists and so forth. And now, but the next part, do not fear what they fear, nor be in dread. And I would suggest you read the context. This is exactly what's happening right now. If you are fearing, oh no, COVID-19 is going to come and kill me, do not fear what they fear and do not be in dread. COVID-19 is not going to kill you. Again, as I point out, in 2020, the total death count from COVID-19 is probably around zero, because there's a difference again between dying of and dying with. And as I said almost 2 years ago now, it's the last straw on the camel's back. If someone gets the flu who is has multiple issues, the top three apparently are age, obesity, and lack of vitamin D. Those are apparently the top three things. If you have those in whatever combination and you have therefore a weakened system, you just need a little push to get over the edge. And typically, because it's described often that the flu is a thing that pushes people over the edge when they're old. And, it's the last straw. Because your body can take it normally. And if you have too many other things and you get a flu, it's too much. And you die. So there is, as it's often called, the winter burden. Because more people get the flu in winter, because there's a variety of reasons why the flu spreads more in winter. Because in the drier climate, when the flu, the virus comes out of your mouth, it goes to the ground in drier air, or in the warmer air. In the cooler air, it stays, floats, and goes farther, fundamentally. It's not that the flu is killing you. It's the last straw on the camel's back. It's the thing that pushed you over. So you're dying with, not of. So if you are in poor health, any illness can push you over the edge. But then there's the other aspect of it. What happens is you test somebody. And if they test positive, the government our government goes to various hospitals and so forth and says, you have a dead body, we're going to pay you money to handle whatever. I mean, it's the way the medical system works. It's a racket. It really is. And the government's highly involved. And so they say, we'll give you, what is it, $15,000 or so when you have a dead body. But if you have a dead body of COVID, we'll give you $30,000. Do you think that's an enticement to say, well, look, he tested positive. It's COVID death. And you will find so many places. It's, yes, just if they test positive, call it a COVID death by policy. So, and what happens? You built a huge industry, a multi-billion dollar industry that you've padded. And that's why when you see a new, the Delta variant came out or the Omicron variant, the stock value of Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson and whatnot goes up. Because people say, oh, they're going to make more money. It's basically fraud. And you're fearing what they fear. It's the same concept of the First Peter. And I've talked with a couple of people recently. And they're living in fear. So you live in fear. You know, it's one thing when you talk to somebody face to face who lives in fear, who thinks the face mask helps. Again, you know, for example, if there was, I don't know, a Christian school, for example, that especially if they had on their website pictures of the kids in the classroom wearing masks, years ago that would be considered child abuse, because and I want to so many things to do, but one of the things I would like to do is say, okay, if you are trying to teach people, you know, what was school supposed to be doing, teaching people, well, say, here, let's teach you how we're doing so well by having you wear a mask. So what we're going to do, because they're under $100, we're going to get one of these CO2 sensors that we can put under the mask. And everybody in the class can check to see, when you're not wearing a mask, the amount of CO2 that you're inhaling. When you wear the mask, you put the sensor in there and see the amount of CO2 you're inhaling. And you'll find that, you know, the OSHA levels of CO2, let's say above this level, is you know, a no-go zone. It's unhealthy. That's exactly what you have when you wear a mask. That's why some people get headaches and things of that nature. It's child abuse. So a school should do that, right? Because they want to show by demonstrating. So you train the kids to think and say, oh, look, these people are loving me. They use government funding, direct or indirect, and in order to educate me. And they have an agency that says, this is unhealthy for me. And then they have another agency that says, this is safety for me by putting on a mask. And you can see where, when I test this, I can say, yes, it is unhealthy for me. And does it help me protect from the people around me? Well, when you have decades worth of studies of large-scale randomized controlled tests that show that the face mask has basically no impact on spread of viruses. So I'm going to do something that is useless to protect me, wearing a mask, and I, in the process of doing that, I'm going to increase the CO2 level coming to my body that is going to give me headaches and other things. And I'm going to say, don't these people take care of me? Isn't this an act of love? Or is it an act of obedience to the state? Are you fearing what they fear? Are you living in dread? Are you stupid? Why don't I leave it at that? My lady, I love you and I love our kids. Putting our kids at North Hills Christian School, who is not acting very Christian, is child abuse. I'm the one that's loving our kids. I'm the one that's loving you. It's not you. It's not your dad. My lady, I love you.